Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for super chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, February 25th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I am a walking zombie right now, but do not shoot me or shoot an arrow through my head. Oh my goodness, I'm having a great time, the time of my life, traveling with my family on the Chicken Whisperer Tour sponsored by Tractor Supply. 5 events in 5 days is taking its toll. 3 down, 2 to go, and along with other things I have to go on along with this. Just this morning, of course, we're dealing on an hour time change too, so we still haven't got used to that. What time is your class? What time is the radio show? What time is this meeting? What time is that conference call? But this morning, let's just talk about the events so far. We've had a great time. We did broadcast from one event live, which was awesome. Maybe 2 events, actually, we broadcast live from. But we have had a great time. We have met so many awesome and nice people, and that's the best part of doing the tour is talking chicken and meeting some great chicken folks across this great land. It all started on Friday in Enterprise, Alabama, a brand spanking new store there. The staff was absolutely wonderful as well, and we basically had a getting started with Backyard Poultry workshop there. Enterprise, Alabama, starting that Friday evening from 5 to 8 p.m., Jen did the official count of 25 attendees for that event. So we were very pleased because it was heavy thunderstorms and heavy downpours during that event. And so we're glad people braved the weather and came on out, met some Facebook fans there as well, and made a lot of new fans. And we had a great, great time. Then, of course, we left about 9:30, 10 o'clock p.m., headed over to Brewton, Alabama. Headed over to Brewton, Alabama, and got situated there. Got all the camper hookups, the water and the power and all that kind of getting our little home on wheels hooked up there at the Tractor Supply in Brewton, Alabama for the Saturday event. So here we had an event Friday night from 5 to 8 p.m. Then we're eating the supper in the camper. Then we're getting the camper ready, and then we're heading in the rain over to Brewton. We get to Brewton. We have to set up everything, get situated, get a good night's sleep. Then we're back. Good night's sleep, hardly that night. And then through the thunder and lightning and whatnot. Then Saturday morning, we had a great time. We did have a broadcast of the radio show live this past Stack Tractor Supply. Again, great store, great little town. The whole town's population, they said, was about the 6,000. And we had a great turnout. We had about 40. 40 was the official count from the Tractor Supply manager there. 40 people attended the workshop, which was absolutely wonderful. Met some Facebook fans, some friends, and some new friends. And it was absolutely a great event during Saturday. Again, then we loaded up, unhooked the camper, got everything done. I think we may have stopped for supper. Or did we? I don't even remember. Holy cow, it all just goes into one big pot. So then we left Brewton and we head to Pensacola. I think we got to Pensacola. I guess it was a Saturday afternoon. Got ready for the Sunday event yesterday, which was no radio show yesterday, from 2 to 5 p.m. We got set up. You can see the pictures of all these events on our Facebook page. And yesterday, we actually had an executive with Tractor Supply Corporation, Tractor Supply Company, fly down for this event in Pensacola yesterday. And we had, this is the Tractor Supply executive counted as people fed in there, 85 participants for that event, which was absolutely incredible. It was standing room only. We had seating for about 24, 25 people. There were only 2 rows. I looked at the pictures. Only 2 rows of chairs. And so, and then plus hay bales that people could sit on, which was and standing room only. People were sitting on pallets of feed. They were standing, leaning on pallets from where we were at all the way back to the register. We got pictures of it, and the Tractor Supply executive was thrilled, and she counted 85 people yesterday's event. It was awesome. We had a great time. Lots of great questions. Lots of great participants. It was awesome. So we had a good time there. And then, of course, after that event was over yesterday, we had supper there in Pensacola, and then we hit the road. We actually hit the road, and we came down I-10 in Florida, heading east, if you will, and we are now in Crestview, Florida. Crestview, Florida is where we're at right now. We are broadcasting live, but we are not at the Tractor Supply yet. It's just about 3 or 4 miles up the road. So we will be tonight at the Crestview, Florida Tractor Supply. Okay, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. tonight. They'll be starting at 5, getting started with Backyard Poultry Workshop. After that, of course, if you bring your books, there'll be autographs, pictures, and questions and answers, of course. So that event is going to be awesome tonight. Based on weather, okay, after the event tonight, we will pack up and we will head over to Marianna, Florida. And hopefully we'll get to Marianna, Florida this evening, safe and sound. And then tomorrow night, Tuesday night, the 26th, tomorrow in Marianna, Florida, another Getting Started with Backyard Poultry Workshop, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. We hope you can attend one of those. Not too far Crestview from Pensacola, so if you missed it last night, couldn't attend, it's only about a 45-minute drive over here to Crestview, so come on over. We'd love to see you tonight if you could not make it in Pensacola yesterday for that big crowd. Busy morning so far. Had to wake up early. We had a run-through of the new webinar that's going to be taking place this Thursday with the USDA Biosecurity Birds Program. So this morning from about 10 to 11, really 45, I just hung up with them and got everything ready for today's broadcast of the radio show. We were running through a practice run of the webinar coming up, Raising Chicks into Healthy Chickens, and that's going to be this coming Thursday. I'll make sure, again, I post on our Facebook and Twitter page how you can pre-register for that webinar. It's going to be awesome. Some people in the chat room are saying they already signed up. We did a run through today. It's not quite events that we're doing, not as much information. It's about an hour, hour and 15 minutes of information. It concentrates a little more heavy on the biosecurity aspect of starting your new flock. So we got on there and we got had that practice, and then literally in 10 minutes, get everything ready, open the chat room, get online, advertise the show, post it, and we still haven't even got packed up really to head up to the Tractor Supply for the event this evening. So it is one of those weeks, but hey. So if you hear me yawning just like you did now in the background, you will know why. I am beat and I'm whooped, but it is an awesome energy rush, meeting the fans, meeting all the Facebook fans and the chicken lovers that want to come out and learn about chickens. And, God, what a great time we are having. Also, we've had great media at the events. I'll post a little bit later. I know that the Bruton newspaper posted about the event and about us. The Enterprise, they had some newspaper media there, and they actually did some video. I got to go try to find that and see if it is on the newspaper's website there from Enterprise, Alabama. Yesterday, we had the major paper from Pensacola out. They did lots of pictures and a good long interview with me. I know that I think, is in the printed paper here in Pensacola. I got to pick me up a copy of that and add to the archives that I've got in the office of our events. It's also on their website where you can read the article and see some of the pictures they took. And we hope you're a fan on Facebook, facebook.com/thechickenwhisper. I've been posting pictures from each event, including the one yesterday, on our Facebook page. So hope you enjoy those as well, even though you maybe can't go from town to town with us. But you can still join the fun and the great education of spreading the chicken love on our Facebook page. So before I forget, also let me tell all of you guys, we've got a chicken coop contest going on right now. And there's just a few more days, actually, just a few more days to enter. It's going to get a little tricky here because the big USDA webinar is this coming Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, my radio show goes from 12 to 2. I'm going to have two poultry scientists come into the house. I'm going to have a poultry vet with USD come into the house. And so we've got to get ready for this webinar. So I'm still anticipating on giving coop away, announcing the winner and everything this Thursday. But it may be a very short show. It may be, okay, everybody's listening. Hello, I know this is the big day. We're giving away this chicken coop, and then we give away a chicken coop, and then I'm off the air. So I can get ready for that awesome webinar that's going to start Thursday at 2. Yes, the webinar will be archived, so if you can't tune in at 2, it will be posted at the Biosecurity for Birds website there as well. So Thursday's going to be an interesting show. I don't want to mess with the contest, but let me Let me go ahead and tell you how you can enter if you haven't already entered. There's one entry per household, so if you've already entered, then you are entered. But we are giving away an awesome chicken coop from MyPetChicken.com. It is the four-square chicken coop, valued at about $550, shipped directly to your front door. We are also giving a complete watering system from ChickenFountain.com. So that will be your grand prize package if you win, shipped directly to your front door. How awesome is that? Now, how to enter? Very, very simple. You need to send me an email. Your email is your entry. You need to send that to contest@chickenwhisperer.net. So you're going to send me an email, contest@chickenwhisperer.net, okay? When you send that email, put Chicken Coop Contest in the subject line, okay? Chicken Coop Contest in the subject line, or Coop Contest. In the email itself, I need three things from you. I need your name, your shipping address, and your phone number. Your name, your shipping address, and your phone number. And the email itself, hit send. I will get that. You should get a reply email saying thank you for your entry. And that is the way to enter. One entry per household. So you and your husband living under the same roof can only enter one time. But if grandma lives in a separate house next door, she can enter as well. If you have relatives in New York that don't keep chickens, but they want you to try to win, they can enter the coop contest. And if they win, they can tell me to ship the coop to you. Okay, no big deal. How simple is that? Just letting you know, if you won any prizes last week, including the Chicken Fountain brooder caps, again, there will be a little bit of delay in getting those prizes to you. I have not even sent that information to the companies where you have won, whether you won Happy Hen Treats or what have you, because I have been on this tour, and it is kicking my rear end. So maybe by the time later this week or beginning of next week, I will get that and have time to send all of that to the sponsors, and you will eventually get your prize, I promise you. So no problem. So no worries there. Let's see. Yes, we Little Whisperers in the background, Caleb and Jen as well. Couldn't do it without them. Jen is a huge, huge help selling the ever-so-popular Chicken Whisperer t-shirts at our events. We sold a boatload of those yesterday. It also reminds me, if you've placed a t-shirt order, like it says on our website, please allow 2 to 4 weeks for delivery. Normally, it doesn't take that long, but when we are on the road touring, it may take that long. By the time we get back, get the orders, package them, drive them down to the post office, and get them to you. So several of you I know have ordered some new Chicken Whisperer t-shirts. We have them in now, including youth sizes. In our 5 years of doing this, we have never had youth sizes. People have been asking about youth sizes. Oh, I wish you had youth sizes. When will you have youth sizes? I wish you would get youth sizes. Now we have youth sizes. Okay, so those of you who have been saying, when are you going to have youth sizes? We have them now. Place your order. I did it just for you. Go just to chickenwhisperer.com, click on the Chicken Whisperer store, and you can click on T-shirts, and you can see all the sizes we have for youth and adults. We're on tour right now. Please allow 2 to 4 weeks for delivery. The prices do include shipping. The prices you see there include shipping, okay? All righty. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We've got Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. We've got several great topics for you today that we are going to press radio show. I'll probably turn it over to the Chicken Doctor, and then I'll get a little bit of work done and start packing some things up for the event tonight. But you know Peter, he can talk and talk and talk with wonderful information, so I know that he will do just a fine job. I will be listening, I will be hanging out, but maybe doing multitasking. But today's topic, it's hard to even pronounce. We have got, of course, the waddle of the chicken and what the waddle is all about. We have the uropharyngeal gland, and we have an update on avian flu. A lot of stuff we need to pack into this radio show today with Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. Can you tell I'm a little zombie-ish now? I'm talking fast. I'm talking a little crazy. I'm trying to get all this done, and whoop, whoop, whoop. One thing comes after the other, so just bear with me. Because I'm a zombie doesn't mean you have to shoot me or put an arrow through my head. Those of you who watch, I guess, what is that show, Walking Dead. So, anywho, thank you very much for attending in the chat room. It's good to see all of our regular listeners and our new listeners as well. Thank you to all the over-the-road truck drivers. We see you when we're on the road. We thank you very much for tuning in. All the homeschoolers that incorporate this show in their curriculum every day. All of the Feed and Seed stores that stream this radio show live to their listeners every day, we thank you very much as well, whether you're listening live, and all the archive listeners that can't listen live but listen when you can, thank you very much. Listening numbers are up. They are at a record all-time high. It is amazing. So thank you very much for doing that. Let me see what else is going on in the world of Chicken Whisper and contests and things like that. Remember about the webinar this Thursday. It's going to be good, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It will be live. It will be me, a poultry scientist from the USDA and a certified avian vet from the USDA, concentrating primarily on biosecurity, but also some quick things to get started with your backyard chickens, raising chicks into healthy chickens. So we've got all of that going on. My goodness gracious. All righty, let me see. Yes, we've got Peter Brown that has called in. Thank goodness, because we're going to bring him on officially, and then I'm kind of going to turn it over to him while I pack a few things here and there, see if I need to do anything continuing with this webinar with USDA and get ready for the event tonight, things like that. I will be listening. I will be commenting on occasion, but it'll be good to turn it over to Peter Brown. So everybody in the chat room, everybody out in their listener land, let's give Peter Brown a big, big applause and a big welcome today. And we will welcome Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. If they don't have it, you don't need it. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing today?
I am doing good. I am, wow, this tour is kicking my rear end. 5 events in 5 days, plus travel in between events and everything else. Webinar rehearsals and radio shows. I could really use a long 10-hour nap right about now. I may try to get a nap before tonight's event at 5 p.m. in Crestview, Florida. But other than that, doing very, very well. Wouldn't have it any other way. Meeting great people across this great land and talking chicken, which we love to do. And I'm glad you're here to talk chicken with us today on this Monday episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. And several topics today. One, of course, includes the wattle. One, of course, includes an update on the avian flu, and then something about a gland that I can't pronounce, which I'm sure you'll fill us in on. So we're definitely I tried to pronounce it and I probably destroyed it, but you're the chicken doctor for that reason, not me. So you will I'm going to say I kind of like that listener that calls the comb the decoration thingy, and she calls the waddle the wobbly gobbly. So that's more my tune of chicken keeping for America, but that's why we have the experts like yourself on. So like I said, I'm going to kind of turn it over to you. I will be listening and participating as much as possible. We are ready to learn all about these topics from you, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. Thank you for joining us.
Sure. And I'm glad you're doing all the traveling, because I know what it's all about when I...
Yes, you do.
And to have to do that, if I had to pack up everything every day and move on and go someplace the next day, I definitely would not be doing it. Definitely. So.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, how far is it between stops? I mean,
I schedule it. Thank goodness. Basically, I pick the route, and then Tractor Supply kind of pick the stores, and so I deliberately chose where once I got to an area that it wasn't a lot of travel in between. For example, between Enterprise and Bruton, it was about 2 hours. Between Bruton and Pensacola, it was about an hour and, say, 20 minutes. Now, last night's trip was only an hour, so that wasn't too bad there to hear. Tonight, we'll be on the road for about an hour and a half, maybe hour and 45 minutes. So I kind of scheduled it to where once we travel to an area, to say that make that initial 3 to 8 hour drive, once we're at an area, then we're looking at maybe between an hour to 2 hours max between stores. So still not too bad, but you know, when you factor in unhooking all the camper stuff, the water hookup, the power hookup, getting everything ready to hit the road, and then having to do it's still better, I can assure you, with the Chicken Whisper Mobile, Peter, it's still much better than having to pull into a hotel, get that cart, traveling with kids, pull the cart into the room that evening, load the cart again, take it out to the car, get to another hotel, unload it again. It's because, you know, it's much better, of course, with the RV than it ever will be with the hotel rooms and whatnot. Yeah. But, yeah, it's not like we're traveling 8 hours a day. We will make the – and just to let people know and get excited, I have heard probably from more people in the Michigan area than any other area in the country. I talked to the Tractor Supply exec yesterday and talked about our next tour, which will be in May, And we're actually looking at going up to the Michigan area in May for the next quarterly tour, maybe like an Ohio, Michigan, maybe Kentucky. I doubt St. Louis that way, but for May. So we'll keep you posted so all the folks in Michigan can get excited. So we may be looking at May tour, Ohio, Michigan, maybe Kentucky in that area. But, yeah, I designed it so there wouldn't be too much – enough travel to where we wouldn't be pulling customers from two different stores or three different stores. So enough travel to that, but still not so bad where we can oh, somebody's upset. What happened? Anyway. So anyway, so that's not too bad. So, but I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, and we're going to learn from your vast knowledge.
All right. Well, I guess it doesn't matter where I start. So we talked a few weeks ago about the avian influenza, and just to give people a just a little bit of an update, I feel it is important. There have been outbreaks recently, and I say recently, we're talking about November or so of last year, right through present day, from China to Mexico to Australia to Taiwan, latest one seems to be in Germany. And I only bring this up to reinforce to everybody a little bit of biosecurity. Do the best you can out there. Your waterfowl are going to be, you know, and they're migrating here like crazy. I heard a report on the radio this morning, had about 50,000 Canadian geese migrate through here so far, and a little over 125,000 snow geese. And you may have heard me say here on the show before that here sometimes the snow geese, if you look out in the field, it looks like it's snowed even though there's no snow around. So, and they leave behind, and many times, not in all cases obviously, but in many cases they will leave behind some sort of bacterial viral thing or whatever they're carrying. Avian influenza certainly could be one of those things that they leave behind. But it has this particular disease, as do some others, have a huge impact on the country where the problem is, as far as their economy is concerned. We know Mexico has had a huge problem with it and had a recent re-outbreak very close to other farms that had outbreaks previously. Just to give you an idea, when one of these things happen, nobody wants their eggs, nobody wants their chicken. No country now is wanting to take chickens or anything out of or eggs out of Germany just because of the fact that the avian influenza has been picked up there. So it's just something, you know, I want to keep passing it on. It's a nasty disease. And there are other diseases out there, okay? They've had some problems with Newcastle in Czechoslovakia, Romania, and things of that nature in those particular countries, Newcastle being a totally different virus than the avian influenza virus, not related at all. But just as devastating, flocks don't recover from it at all, as a general rule. And it's highly contagious, and nobody wants these things around. So I just bring it up so that we can be cognizant of what's going on out there and protect ourselves. That's what it's all about. Protect yourself from these things in the best way that you can. You know, biosecurity goes a long way. Let nobody on your farm that you don't know, no matter who they are. Put up signs to that effect, fencing if necessary. Just keep people out. If you have somebody coming to purchase birds, you want to make sure that you take all the precautions that you can. And I know that some folks will poo-poo this idea of these Tyvek coveralls and little booties and all that kind of stuff. But I will say this, there are enough problems out there with poultry, and you, the unsuspecting buyer, can very easily end up with that on your premise. Just recently, at one of the shows, somebody had picked up some birds or a bird at this particular show, got it home, and the bird had some respiratory issues, are quite severe. Upon further examination, the bird had some additional parasite problems. So I would run back through while we're talking about this. I think it's a good idea to remember that you are not obligated to buy a bird from somebody who does not have birds that are better than yours, as far as the health is concerned. You may be going to somebody's place to buy a bird that you think is genetically superior to, or you want to add some of their genetics to your line, but you don't have to add their health problems with it. So I'll just take a second here and run through my rendition of what should happen. Do a drive-by of the premise first. Take a look. You don't like what you see, keep moving. You're under no obligation to buy. You stop and you get out and you look at the birds. You don't find anything that's healthy. Don't find anything that, or the conditions that the birds are being reared in are not healthy looking, not better than your own or equal to your own. Make an excuse. You'll think about it, you'll change your mind. It's no different in a sense than going down and buying a car and they try to pass one off on you that you don't like the interior color or whatever the case may be. Same thing. Leave the bird right where it is, because this thing of it just has a cold, ends up being the Trojan horse that will ruin your flock. And you can spend crazy amounts of money trying to save your flock after you've brought these birds that are infected home with this other problem that these people have. If you've never had mites before and you bring in somebody's bird that's loaded with mites, guess what? Now you've got them on your place. Now you're going to have a very tough time, as a general rule, getting them under control and getting rid of them as best you can. The respiratory issues speak for themselves. I'll say this, and I've said this here on the show before, but it's worth repeating. After you've done your examination of the bird, you want to check the ears. Yes, we do. We want to check their ears because they do get ear infections. And that stuff you see coming out that looks like yellow wax is not just earwax like people get. It's an ear infection. Very difficult and very costly to take care of. So you want to make sure you take care of that. You look at both ears. If the ears look good, fine. Then you want to check the eyes. There should be no watery eyes, no runny eyes, no glassy-looking eyes, no eyes that are half open, no eyes that are sealed shut, and that kind of stuff, okay? So you want to make sure you look over the eyes real good. You want to make sure the nostrils are clear, not plugged up with dirt, not plugged up with mucus, not running, not wet, that kind of thing. You want to open the mouth, make sure there's nothing growing in the mouth. Look all the way back down the throat, because a very common disease in birds is called canker. Grows in the mouth just about anywhere. I've got a client right now that's got one that can't swallow its feed. Can't swallow the feed because it's got a giant canker growing way down the back of the throat. Okay? So these will appear as a orange to yellow mass, can be pinhead sized all the way up to quarter sized and beyond. Just depends on how far the growth has gone. So you want to make sure that mouth is nice and clear. Look at the nasal cleft in the top of the mouth. Make sure that that's clear. Make sure the tongue is clear. Look the bird over from head to toe. Look at the vent. Look for mites. Look under the wings. If they're a crested bird, you want to dig through the crest with your fingers and check it over. And I'll tell you this right now. If a person doesn't like you examining their birds, then they've got a problem. And leave it right where it is. Just politely make an excuse that you've changed your mind or whatever. Look at another bird. Put it back. But one of the last things that you certainly want to do with these birds is you want to take and close the mouth, hold fingers over their nostrils. It only takes about 20 seconds or so. And if they start bubbling in the corner of the eyes, put them back and leave them right there. They have an upper respiratory issue. About 95% accurate with that, okay, over the years. It's a very, very accurate way of finding out if the bird does have some sort of a problem with a respiratory issue. So you want to make sure that you're not bringing home the Trojan horse that is going to devastate your flock and devastate your pocketbook. Now, in the last few weeks, we've talked about a multitude of things on this show, but I want to bring up something else about antibiotic resistance. This has to do with humans, but I want to point out something here. We did talk about the fact of people who are homeless, people who live on the street. When I say homeless, I don't mean somebody who's just living in a car or something trying to find some other. I'm talking about people that living in a cardboard box or under an overpass and things like that, unsanitary conditions, end up picking up tuberculosis. And if you don't think this stuff is real, I read an article here recently. This has to do with a unique strain of tuberculosis. And for those of you that aren't familiar with tuberculosis, it's a lung issue. Gets into the lungs. It's bacteria, grows crazy, and destroys lung tissue. People have problems breathing, can cough up blood, spread through the sputum or spit that people spit up. If a person has it and standing in front of you and coughs and some of it gets on you, you could pick it up that way. So there's a number of things that can be done there. But this has to do with Los Angeles and what's an area that they call Skid Row. And this involves roughly 5,000 people. And not all of them are infected there, but it seems to be a growing issue within that particular population of people. And so I bring this up because this is a continuing problem. It's a problem that we at one time in this country did have somewhat under control. It is a worldwide problem, so I see it being a persistent problem for some time to come. On average, about 9 million people in the world have tuberculosis or will contract tuberculosis in some way, shape, form, or another. So I bring it up as a problem with antibiotic resistance because antibiotics are becoming less useful in combating tuberculosis in humans, especially in this situation here in Los Angeles on this area that they call Skid Row. And so much so that they brought in the Centers for Disease Control to help them figure out how to put a stop to it. And when you have folks that don't have a fixed address like this and don't have a decent place to stay, and they then come down with tuberculosis, and then they have to go to a clinic to get treatment. Oftentimes what happens is that they go until they feel better, and then they stop going. And this is where the antibiotic resistance situation comes in. And the treatment for tuberculosis is generally a six-month-long treatment of getting medications pretty much on a daily basis. So you can see how this problem evolves. People who do not have a fixed address and so on, contracting the disease, going and getting some help at a clinic, and then feeling better after, a month or whatever it is, and then not coming back, and then they come back again and they're sick. It's a constant thing. So I just bring it up because there have been some things that I've become aware of, people using medicated feed because of the protein level in it, they like it, and things of that nature, and not understanding what medicated feed in a starter generally means. In most cases, we're talking about something for coccidiosis, and the preponderance of the time, the majority of the time, we're talking about Ampril or Amprolium. And Ampril has been around for many, many, many years. And part of the problem with that is that overuse of it, there is a lot of resistance to it around. And we don't have a whole lot of things in our arsenal to take care of coccidiosis. Usually it's some people like Sulmet, which I don't, but sulfadimethoxine, triple sulfa is available. And the Ampril and Corid being the same thing, so there is no difference between those two. So they're all the same thing. But using those things for the wrong purposes will invite resistance to this. While Ampril itself is not an antibiotic, it's an antagonist. And what that means is that it, instead of literally killing something off, as an antibiotic might do, this actually is ingested by the protozoa, which causes coccidiosis, thinking that it is thymine, which it's not, and then they die. And we had talked about this not too long ago. Actually, we talked about it somewhat when we were talking about avian influenza the first time, and that these things want to live just like we do, so they are able to adapt and change. And bacteria do the same thing, the protozoa do the same thing. It's a fight for survival. So they find a workaround, and that gets passed genetically around, and then first thing you know, everything starts to become resistant as far as those things are concerned. So I brought it up just because it's out there. It's, again, in the news. On the human side, doesn't necessarily affect chickens directly, but indirectly it does. because the use of antibiotics has always been a problem, both on the human side and the animal side. I'll move on here to talking about the wattles of the bird. As Andy had said before, somebody was talking about the comb, you know, being ornamental. To a degree, I think most people would agree that a well-groomed, well-developed bird that is got beautiful shiny feathers, whatever color they may be, having a beautiful red comb and a very distinct set of wattles hanging from its lower jaw is just, to me, very stunning. And to a degree, all of that, the comb, we talked about the comb a couple, 3 weeks ago, and when we talked about that, we said it is ornamental on one hand, but it also is a sexual attractant on the other. And the combination of the comb and the wattles certainly do that from the standpoint of the chicken. But when we think about wattles and things of this nature, we don't normally think about, you know, how it comes about, what's involved with it, what it's made up of, and what its general purpose is. So I'll give you a little rendition here of basically what the wattle encompasses. Not a very complex organ, but yet not a simple organ either. The wattle actually starts out growing during the embryonic development in the egg. We can look at the developing embryo, and we can start to see that right around the ninth day, depending on the breed, some breeds might be a little earlier, some a little bit later, but no more than a day either side, we'll start to see some development of the wattle, and that will be on the lower part of the jaw, where we would normally see it on a bird after the bird has developed, and it is not pronounced, it's not red, but it appears as a white line. And that's the beginning, or what you might want to call the bud of the beginning of the wattle. And it starts to develop, genetically, the changes that will take place in the dermal and the epidermal changes that we would see in a fully developed wattle, obviously, have not taken place at that point. And but simply one day, again, depending on breeds, some breeds are a little bit different than others, but the development of that starts, again, like I said, in the egg, about 8-9 days, you start to see this white line. And when we talked about the comb, we talked about vascularization, we talked about arteries, we talked about veins, we talked about arterioles and these little tiny blood vessels, capillaries. By the next day, whether it be 8 days for the white line or 9 days, so by 9, 10, maybe even 11 days, you'll start to see the vascularization of the capillary blood vessels in that dermal tissue. And then by the time the, 11 days, might even go a little bit longer than that, you'll see what's called the analog, the A-N-L-A-G-E. You don't really need to remember it. It's people like me that remember those things, but this is where the cluster of the embryonic cells start to really develop and start to develop some of this organ there. It's very, very tiny. It will protrude from the jaw somewhere between 2 and 3 millimeters, and might be anywhere from 1/2 to 1 millimeter thick. Okay, at that point, very small. Maybe even a little bit hard to see. But these will be clusters of little cells that are starting to become vascularized with the capillary blood vessels, preparing this area for some growth of the wattle. And in only a matter of a day or two, the growth in this particular area starts to double. Don't forget, we only got 21 days here to get a whole chicken out of this egg. So while the wattle will not develop until later on to the point we know it as an adult bird, all of the cells and the mechanisms to make it grow have to be put in place during the embryonic stage. So that's where it starts out. And at any rate, at that point, 12, 13 days, we start to see it almost double in size. So if we were looking at a thickness of a half a millimeter, we're probably looking at 1 millimeter now. And if we were looking at 1 to 2 in length before, we could be looking at anywhere from 2 to 4. So that may not seem like to most people a huge growth spurt, but in the embryonic world, that's huge. Okay, and the vascularization, I know it's a big word, but all it means is the blood vessels, okay, of different types. This feeds off of the artery, basically, that the comb feeds off of as well. At hatching, again, depending on the breed of the bird, we can be looking at a length of the wattle, although the development is very slight, being somewhere between 8 and 10 millimeters long. So it's almost tripled in size from the 8 or 9 days up to the 21 days. So we see that rapid growth that is absolutely necessary to take place for an embryo to fully develop. And certainly the wattle at that point is still small, detectable but small. The skin of the wattle is similar to the skin of the comb, and it is different than the skin of the rest of the body. The feathered and non-feathered parts of the body. The reasoning behind it more than likely is that because they hang down and because the birds are foragers and because there is so much vascularization there, that the skin is thicker in case it gets caught on a thorn or a bush or a stick or wherever. And also, you know, for when they get in fights with each other or a predator or whatever, while it will bleed, it takes more to break this particular skin than it does the normal skin of the bird. Now, when we talked about the comb, we talked about the fact that there was what was called a mucoid material that held a tremendous amount of water. That material is still available in the comb, although not in the wattle, rather, although not in as much quantity as the comb would be. But it still is there, and we referred to that back then as hyaluronic acid. That would be hyaluronic, and then the word acid. This is an important thing on the human side. You've heard me say before that when we talk about human embryo development, a lot of the research in humans is done in the chickens because of their quick growth and the fact that somewhere around 60% of our genes are shared with chickens. So there are some similarities, whether we like it or not. And so you have an organ like the comb is highly vascularized, blood vessels, veins, arteries, capillaries, arterioles, which are just real small blood vessels. The mucoid material is present as the hyaluronic acid. And just to throw this little word out there for you, there is a specialized place on the bird's face. It's where the upper and lower beak come together. And we've all seen it it's available on most birds, but it's red in that area. It is technically part of the wattle, okay? But it would be right in almost, if you took your own fingers and put them up to your lips under your nose and you came down to the corners of your mouth, that's where we'd be talking about, but not in the corner of the mouth, but right at that juncture, that little bit of skin around there, when that becomes red in a chicken, it's called a rictus, R-I-C-T-U-S, and that's where the comb actually starts down from, that particular area called a rictus, R-I-C-T-U-S. And that covers that part of it. The word that Andy couldn't get a hold of is called the uropygial gland. Okay, that's uropygial. And when I was growing it up, we kind of called it the part that went over the fence last. There's a whole bunch of names for it: the preen gland, the rump gland, the oil gland. Oiler, I've heard all kinds of different things having it called that. It doesn't matter what you call it. I don't think I'd run around every day calling it the uropygial gland. Oil gland suits me just fine. You can call it whatever you like. This is a gland that is at the tail end of the bird, and it's what they call a bilobed gland. And what that means is that it's got two basic little sacs. If you were to look at it, kind of reminds me, if you look at it on most birds, it's got some connective tissue in the middle, kind of got a little V kind of thing there in the middle, where and off to each side. It looks like, almost to me anyway, looks like one of those things you would decorate a cake with. You know, you put the filling in it and you squeeze it. That's what it kind of looks like. A point, almost pointed at the ends, but bag-like down in the back where it actually attaches to the body. And they're actually, it's considered one gland, but it has two lobes. So that's where the bilobed part comes in. And it is held together and held down by a strong connective tissue, and part of that has to be that way because of the action of the birds using the gland to preen themselves. We all have seen birds do that, and so when the bird puts pressure on the gland, these little bag-like things get depressed, and they squeeze out a type of waxy oil. And if you look at it close, there should be some, usually are, some downy feathers that are located right around the openings to this. And the openings will appear generally as two very small slits, a little bit hard to see. And these would go through what they call papilla, and it's P-A-P-I-L-L-A. And I've heard it described before as looking like a small nipple or a nub on the bird's tail section there. And this is where the oil will come out and make its way to the outside. These downy feathers will help hold it in place so that the bird can pick it up with its own feathers of the head and the beak, and then deposit it anywhere it wants to on its own body. And generally, the bird will preen itself mostly on their feathers, but they do spread this on their feet and their legs, believe it or not, not quite as often as they do on their feathers. Again, this is something we don't often think of, but this development of this starts in the egg, in the embryo, and appears right around the ninth day. Again, some breeds a little earlier, some breeds a little later, but right in that area there. And these two papilla will be look like little nubs when you first look at them. And as the bird starts to feather out and the downy feathers come on, it basically hides it and it's not easily seen with the eye. The oil comes out through these two slits, which have two small tubes that go back into the gland itself where the oil is produced, and little sacs inside. And again, the bird will press down on that, kind of squeeze it out, go into these downy feathers, pick it up, and rub it up and down on its on itself. The skin covering of the oiled gland is similar to the feathered portions of the body. It is more sensitive to damage from that standpoint than would be the comb, the skin of the comb of the wattles. The obviously, the oil helps to keep the feather barbules. When we had talked about feathers, we talked about how they interlock. And this is extremely important in waterfowl. That's why waterfowl need to have access to water to help them be able to keep the feathers together and preen and that kind of thing. The oily, waxy substance that comes out of the oil gland contains a what's called a precursor to vitamin D, and it takes the activation of sunlight in order to make it into vitamin D, which is then absorbed through the bird's skin. So it has medicinal quality to it. Material that comes out is a special name for it. Okay, this gland is called a bilobate, which means it's a bilobed sebaceous gland. Okay, and so the material coming out is called sebum, S-E-B-U-M, and this is a mix of oil, waxy substances, and some other esters and stuff that are in there. And this would be different than lanolin that comes from sheep, which is predominantly more wax than anything else. Your own earwax that you have in your own ear is partly considered a sebum, okay? And sebum is just a Latin word meaning fat or tallow. It's generally considered to be odorless, but if the oil gland becomes impacted, which from time to time they do, the bacteria can give it an odor. So that's one way of detecting whether or not the bird may have a oil gland that might be impacted or infected. It's the fact that a bird that didn't smell before might pick up an off odor. And it needs to be taken care of. Usually, depression of the oil gland with your hands will open it up, and massaging it will help to open it up and get out. Sometimes a hot compress works as well, as far as those things are concerned. As far as the gland itself is concerned, it's not a big deal. As far as locating it, again, right at the top of the tail, right on the back of the bird. And if you have chickens and you haven't seen it, you need to take a look at it so you'll be able to identify it. Birds that are denied the ability to preen themselves generally have very poor feathering. The feather barbules start to come apart. And you get what we call a splayed feather. The feathers they look ugly. Bird looks shaggy, like a shaggy dog. And it's not healthy. They will lack getting the natural vitamin D3, vitamin D to their skin. And the preening is an important thing for keeping up the texture and the tone of the skin, the pliability of the skin, and also for keeping the feathers in good shape. So that's about all I've got, Andy. I don't know where you're at.
Here.
I haven't heard a word out of you. If you want to take a break and come back and take questions or whatever.
Let's, if you don't mind, like I said, I appreciate you coming on today. Lots of great information. I'm sure lots of folks take note. I'm just about as dead as a doornail right now, so I'm definitely going to have to take a nap with Caleb this afternoon in order for me to do good at my class tonight and drive about an hour and a half the night after that to get to Mariana. So I will apologize to everybody, but I am singing the praises of poultry and spreading the chicken love, and 5 tours in 5 days plus travels, taking its toll now, 3 down, 2 to go, but attending the event tonight, get a good event, and I will not have a good event, I can assure you, if I don't get caught up a little bit this afternoon. So, if you're done with the material, thank you very much. But if you don't mind, and our listeners I know hate it, and I apologize, but I in order for the a good show tonight, I've got to get some shout out this afternoon for a couple of hours or so. Think about that, Doc.
Yeah, not a problem. I understand that. No, it's not a problem at all. Matter of fact, because there's been several outbreaks of Newcastle around the world, wouldn't be a bad idea. We haven't hit Newcastle in quite some time, so maybe next week we could do the Newcastle and then take questions, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that sounds good. I know we've done a lot of shows. I think back to was our 5th year urban point we've ever done Newcastle in the past. I'm assuming we have, but if it's been long enough to where I don't even remember if we did it or not, it's probably time to update that and do another one. So one last really quick question here before we end the show, and I apologize for ending it early today, but Brits and Grits has a quick question here. Suggestions regarding how to treat frostbite for wattles.
Well, technically, there really isn't a treatment for it after it happens. Once it happens and frostbite, they turn black just like the comb. And it ends up as dead tissue. And generally, it's not a big deal. It isn't, I guess, but it falls off. The thing you have to watch for, like you would with a comb with it, is a bacterial infection setting in or something like that, or gangrene. So I would probably just put some triple antibiotic ointment on it. You usually get that just about anywhere, and put that on there and see how that goes. But really, as far as preventing it, the bigger they are, the worse it is. And we talked about the comb the last time. We talked about all of the different methodologies that people try to use to do it. And I think that if you were in an area where it was constantly below zero, you would probably end up having to put some sort of heat in. We did talk about that, and we talked about doing it securely and that kind of thing, and chaining it to the ceiling so that it doesn't fall down. All of those kinds of issues, even in the coop that we're building here, went way out of our way to make sure that any of the electric that was put in it is not accessible to the birds, not accessible to water and all those other things. We do not intend to put heaters in. They're not really required here. It's a well-insulated building and that kind of thing, so keeping it from happening in the first place is the number one priority, in my opinion. That's what I would work towards. And if you know it's going to be cold and the birds are outside or something like that, keep the. We talked about it before. The dampness will make it worse. The humidity, the overall temperature, the wind chill. We talked about the wind chill. I think the wind chill is just about as bad as anything. So if you can keep the bird from having the moisture, and you can keep it from having the direct wind, you might have a shot at keeping it in some really cold temperatures from getting frostbite in the first place. But my position on it would be to do everything that I could to prevent it in the first place, because prevention is the old story, prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that's what I would do. If you can't do that, then Vetrex or something like that, or the comb reddening solution. I don't think the Vaseline works all that well, from what I've been able to gather. But massaging it beforehand, feeding the birds really well just before they go to roost, goes a long way in helping keep their body temperature up, keep the birds huddled up, make them get up on a roost and try to make it so that there's enough space for everybody so that nobody's left out. and hopefully those things won't happen.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that with us, and thank you for coming on today. And we'll look at next Monday being Newcastle disease, so we'll start promoting that later in the week. Same time here, next Monday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay.
For tuning in. Thank you very much, Doc, and we'll see you next Monday. Thanks. All righty. Thank you all for tuning in. Backyard Poultry with a Chicken Whisperer, this Monday episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor. It's always a pleasure to have Peter on. Great, just chock full of information. And it's just an asset to the show to have him on every single Monday. And so we appreciate you, Peter Brown, for coming on. I'm sorry to cut the show a little late. Sometimes after his material, we go to questions and answers and things like that. We did get one asked for Brits and Grits, but I'm going to have to call it quits for the show. And get on up here to the Tractor Supply here in Crestview and get them kind of set up in the store and whatnot, and let them know what to expect. And then I'm going to try to get a couple of hours nap with my son Caleb this afternoon so I can, the show tonight will be worth going to. And then hit the road this evening, Marianne. As always, we appreciate your special thoughts and prayers for safe travel for me and my family, and say a little prayer that Lily decides to make her grand entrance in about, later than the next 2 days. So Jen's doing pretty good. She's a little exhausted as well, ready to pop any day now. She's my T-shirt seller, and make sure she watches Caleb while I'm doing the work and things. So she's working hard on the tour as well, but no lifting for her because we want to make sure that Lily makes her grand entrance a little later rather than sooner. So, but thank you very much for tuning in today. We do broadcast live Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And let me just go ahead at this point and let you know, I was really working hard to try to get the owner of Crazy K Farm on tomorrow with the inventor and maker of the Hen Saver Hen Apron and Saddle. And she really wants to come on and share with us about hen aprons, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the do's and the don'ts, the waterproof aprons that are out and how they can be very dangerous and maybe even life-threatening to your hens. But she, out of all the days we had open, she couldn't do it tomorrow. So, and I'll post this on Facebook a little later, but based on looking at the schedule for tomorrow, the tour does wrap up tomorrow night in Marianna, Florida. That'll be our last event, and then we're hopefully we'll get home about midnight Wednesday night. And then I know for a fact I've got a doctor's appointment for Caleb on Wednesday morning and Jen on Wednesday morning. So I'm just going to tell you now, more than likely, there will not be a radio show tomorrow or Wednesday based on this big tour and based on some getting home Wednesday after a five-day tour, having two doctor's appointments, and as you know, just coming home from vacation, what involves in that when you get home. So I just I hate to tell you there's going to be a show and then not be one. So I'm just kind of telling you now, and I'll probably post it officially on Facebook later this evening. There will probably not be a show tomorrow and maybe not on Wednesday. But we will definitely return Thursday because we have an awesome chicken coop to give away and a chicken fountain watering system to give away. That's this Thursday. We will try to call the winner live on the radio show and let them know that they've won. And we may try to give away some prizes on Thursday as well. But I don't know, it may be a fun Friday. So we'll just have to see. Also Thursday, I have to prep for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds webinar, which will be live on Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern. So I've got two scientists coming by the house that day, so it's going to be quite the day as well. So just let you know, no show tomorrow, no show Wednesday. Thursday we will have a show. I'll give away the coop. I'll announce the big winner of that exciting contest. That may be all the time we have to do, so I can log off and get all prepared for the live webinar at 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. And I haven't looked ahead, but maybe there will be a good, fun Friday episode this Friday, and we'll give away some more prizes from our sponsors. So that's kind of the game plan. If you're in or anywhere near Crestview, Florida tonight, come on out, 5 p.m., Crestview, Florida Tractor Supply. Tomorrow night, Marianna, Florida Tractor Supply, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. We hope to see you there, and we hope you have a wonderful and blessed afternoon. And maybe this evening I'll see some of you on Facebook. So, again, thank you very much for tuning in today. Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, and we'll see you definitely Thursday, 12 p.m. at the same time. Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody.
Oh.